Maria is 44. Two kids still at home. A mother who calls twice a day now. A job that started eating into her evenings again. On a Tuesday night, she sits down at the kitchen counter with a cup of tea that she forgets to drink, and she does the thing she's been half afraid to do for a while. She counts. How many people would actually show up if she really needed them? Her husband, yes. Her sister, maybe. They've been strange with each other since last year. A friend from work who's good in a crisis. A neighbor who once brought groceries when Maria had the flu. She writes the names on a paper napkin and runs out of names before she runs out of napkin. 4. Maybe 4.5. She sits with that number, and it feels thin, almost embarrassing, like a thing you'd be ashamed to say out loud. And then, because Maria is the kind of person who always turns a problem into a project, she thinks, okay, what do I do with 4? How does a number like that grow? We answered part of that in the last 2 episodes. But tonight, we answer the part that changes the whole shape of it. The number doesn't grow by trying harder. It grows by giving first. Now, Maria has tried the obvious thing. She's tried to be more available, answered texts faster, said yes to more invitations, forced herself out on nights when she'd rather stay home. She's tried to be more interesting, to have things to say, to take up less space, and be easier to like. What she hasn't tried, because nobody really teaches it this plainly, is giving first without waiting to see if it's returned. Because here's the thing about how most of us handle a thin number. We act like friendship is a thing you sign up for together, a handshake deal where both people agree to show up at the same time. So we wait. We wait for someone to call first. We wait to see if they mean it. We wait for proof that the other person is in before we put ourselves in. And the waiting is killing the number, quietly, one unsent text at a time. The book is blunt about this. A thin number is almost never about being unlikable or hard to love. It's about the shape of what we're doing. Waiting when we could be moving. Holding back when we could be starting the flow. And here's what the 2-hour test already showed us. People who'd show up in a real moment aren't always people who call every week. Sometimes they're people you gave something to, once, that they didn't forget. The number grows from that. We said in episode 1 that the 2-hour test is the honest measure. Not who likes you, not who texts every day. Who would drop what they're doing and come? And in episode 2, we started to look at who's already in that number, even people Maria had half forgotten. Tonight we go one step further. What actually builds that number? Not what adds people to your contacts list, but what makes a person into the kind of friend who would actually come. Here's what the books say, and it's simpler than you'd think. A person shows up in a real moment for the people who gave them something first. Not always something big. A text when she heard he lost the job. A meal left on the porch. A conversation that didn't cost a dime but said, I see you, I'm paying attention, you matter to me. People carry those things. They hold them in a way they can't always explain. And when the real moment comes, when the 4 a.m. call goes out. They don't stop to calculate. They move. Not because of obligation, because of something you put in a long time ago. That's what the number is made of. Not frequency, not proximity. Small acts of giving first, dropped in like objects in a jar, held by the people who received them years and years after the fact. So here's the idea, and it flips the math entirely. You don't grow your number by becoming someone people owe. You grow it by becoming someone people remember gave. And those are 2 completely different things. Owing is a weight. Remembering a gift is a warmth. When people owe you, they avoid you. Nobody likes to feel in debt. When people remember something you gave them, freely, without keeping score, They want to be near you. They think of you when good things happen, and they run toward you when bad things happen. The number grows around that warmth, not by force, not by staying in closer touch, not by adding one more commitment to a life that's already full. It grows because something moved between you and them. Something you put in motion, something that didn't come back to you directly, but changed the air between you two in a way that holds. Think of the jar. You drop something in, a favor, a kind word, a connection, an act nobody asked for, and it doesn't drain you. You still have what you gave, but the person who received it is holding something of yours now. And people who carry something of yours show up differently when you need them. The flow is already going. They just follow it to your door. Here's something that lines up with what the books say and what long-running studies on friendships and belonging have been quietly finding for years. When researchers followed groups of people over time and tracked who ended up with strong, lasting bonds, the kind where someone would actually show up, one pattern kept turning up in the data. The people with the strongest, most lasting ties were not the most popular. They were not the funniest or the best looking or the easiest to be around. What set them apart was that they consistently gave something first, not always something big, sometimes a small act of noticing. A moment of being genuinely useful to someone who didn't expect it. A habit of putting others in touch with the people they needed. And the ties that formed from those small acts held through distance, through years, through the kind of life changes that dissolve a lot of other friendships. The book calls this starting the flow. Researchers have spent years studying it from the outside. What they found and what the books show from the inside land in the same place, giving first, without expecting it back directly, is the quiet engine of every lasting bond. Now here's the pushback, and it's the right one, so I want to give it the room it deserves. If I say, give first, the first thing a reasonable person hears is, but some people will just take. They'll accept the meal and never reciprocate. They'll let me be the one who always calls and never call back. I'll give and give, and it still won't build a number because I'll end up with the same tired people around me, just better fed. That's a real concern, not a cynical one, a grown-up one. And no, I'm not going to tell you it won't happen, because it does. Some people are built to take and not put back. The books don't pretend otherwise. Here's what the books say instead. The problem isn't giving first. The problem is giving to a closed loop, a one-way road where everything flows from you and nothing can return. That's not the flow. That's the well we talked about back in episode 1. What we're after is something different, giving in a way that moves between people, not just from you outward. And here's the quiet thing about that shape. When giving moves between people, when it goes from you to someone, and then from them to someone else, and eventually back around, the person who only takes and never puts anything back becomes visible. Not to you alone, but to everyone in the circle. They stand out. The shape does the watching, so you don't have to spend yourself doing it. So let's go back to Maria and watch what happens when she tries it. Not a plan, not a system. Just one small act of giving first, on a Tuesday evening when she had maybe 20 minutes and not much more. She thought about her sister, the strange distance between them. She didn't call to fix it. She didn't know how to do that yet. But she remembered that her sister had mentioned a hard week at work 2 Sundays ago, and Maria had let it pass without saying anything. So she sent a text. Nothing dramatic. I keep thinking about what you said about work. Hope this week is better. I love you. That's it. Sent it and put the phone down. Her sister called the next morning, and they talked for an hour, which they hadn't done in years. Maria thought, okay. That's one. She thought about the neighbor, the one who left groceries when Maria had the flu, who she'd never properly thanked. She knocked on the door with a small thing she'd baked. 5 minutes. The neighbor lit up in a way that told Maria she was lonelier than Maria had realized. They made a loose plan to have coffee. Maria thought, okay. That's two. She thought about someone from work who'd been struggling and who Maria genuinely liked but had never reached out to outside the job. She sent a quick note. No agenda. Just, I think you're really good at what you do, and I've been meaning to say that. A note like that can carry someone for weeks. Maria didn't know that yet, but she was beginning to feel it. The number wasn't 4.5 anymore. She could feel it starting to breathe. Here's the turn that changes how Maria sees the whole thing. She realizes she hadn't actually done anything that grew her number. She'd done something smaller and more powerful than that. She'd started a flow. The text to her sister didn't add a person to a list. It opened something that had been closed, let something move between two people who'd been holding themselves very still. The knock on the neighbor's door didn't build a friendship in a night. It put one thing in motion. The note to the woman at work didn't seal a bond. It put a small, warm thing in someone's hands that she would carry for a while, and that would change how she thought about Maria when Maria's name came up. You don't grow a number the way you add more things to a shelf. You grow it by letting something move, from you, towards someone, and then onward in whatever direction it goes. And once it's moving, something quiet happens. The number starts to grow on its own, without Maria having to push it. Because a gift that keeps moving finds people. It doesn't stay still and wait for them to come to the giver. It goes out, touches someone, and that person passes some version of the warmth forward, and eventually it comes back around. Not always to you, not always in the same form, but back into the same web of people you're all living inside. The jar fills not because Maria filled it. The jar fills because she started the flow. Now let's bring it to you. Because this stops being anything more than a good story the moment it's only about Maria. So three honest questions, and I want you to actually pause on each one. First, who in your life do you owe a small giving to? Not a big gesture, not a long conversation, a text you've been half drafting, a thank you let pass. A name on your mental list that you keep meaning to reach out to and keep not reaching. Take 30 seconds. You know who it is. Second, is there someone nearby, someone you see or speak to fairly often, who you've never quite taken the step of giving something real to? Not pleasantries, not small talk, but something that says, I see you, you matter, here's something useful. Somebody who might become part of your number if you started one small thing moving between you. And third, and this is the one Maria found hardest, is there someone you've been waiting to give to until they show you they're worth it? Until they call first, or invite first, or make some move that tells you the giving won't be wasted. Because that waiting is a door that never opens from the inside. You can only open it from out here. The number grows from the first gift, not from the proof that it's safe to give. So here is your one thing this week. It has one rule: give something first before you know how it will land. That's the only rule. What you give can be tiny. A text that says, I thought of you this week and I hope you're doing okay. A quick note to someone whose work you actually respect, telling them so. An introduction between two people in your life who'd be better off knowing each other. A porch visit to a neighbor you've been meaning to check on. A small, real thing given freely without waiting to see if it's safe. Here's what this week is not. It's not a test of the other person. You're not giving in order to see if they give back. Not tracking whether they respond the way you hoped, not measuring their worth by what they do with the gift. The giving is for you as much as for them. Because every time you put something in, you're not just helping someone else. You're becoming the person who gives first. and that is the person other people show up for. Give one thing this week. Don't wait for proof. Don't make it big. And do not, whatever you do, give to test them. Give because you want the flow to start. Let the jar do the rest. So that's the heart of it. A thin number doesn't grow by trying harder or by waiting for someone else to go first. It grows the way a jar fills. One small act of giving, put in freely, before you know if it's safe, before you know how it comes back. Maria's number isn't 4.5 anymore. She doesn't know what it is yet. But the napkin has more names on it now, and something is moving that wasn't moving before. Next time we get to the part Maria hadn't expected, what happens when you give first and it doesn't come back? Not the takers. We handled that. The harder case. The friend who's always in crisis. The relationship that seems to take everything and still isn't full. The place where even a good jar can tip over, and how you know the difference. Watched over, as always, by Daisy. I'll see you there.